Hello, once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Joining us to answer your gardening questions today are the familiar gardening voices. Bob Graves is a horticulturalist and co-owner of Fatigan's Nursery in Latham, New York. He's also been an avid gardener for some 40 years. Fred Breglia is a certified arborist and director of the Landis Arboretum in Esperance, New York. Greg Ward is back after vacationing. He is back here. Greg runs Ward's Nursery, a lawn and garden resource in Great Barrington, Massachusetts. I'm told by some people on staff that Ward's Nursery is about the greatest place in the whole wide world.
It's one of a couple. Two great places.
I've not been
just
there.
One a little, you know, a little closer.
I'm
to
agnostic
town.
On the whole thing. We welcome your calls, 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can post your comments at the bottom of today's show page on the Vox Pop section of our website, wamc.org/VoxPop, or you can comment on Facebook, facebook.com/WAMC Radio. You'll see a Vox Pop post there, or tweet us at WAMC Vox Pop, or you can email us, voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number to call, 1-800-348-2551. Bob and Fred and Greg, welcome back to the show, gentlemen.
It's great to be back.
Great to be back.
You know, this is the time of year. It's not too hot. This is when I start thinking about gardening.
Yes.
I don't actually do it.
My
people do it, but I think about it a lot.
Your people do it.
Yeah.
You have people.
It's really nice out, and this is a good time. What can you do now?
It's really motivating weather.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, I hate to say this word. I may get some emails about this, but believe it or not, we are preparing for winter.
Oh, yeah.
When I say preparing for winter with trees and shrubs and basically all plants, one of the things that we start to do really, actually we already started in August, continues into September, is that this time of year it's often dry. Mm-hmm. And this is when a lot of plants, trees and shrubs, even though people think, shutting down. Well, shutting down is true, but part of that shutdown process is storing energy for next year's leaf out, and water and nutrients are being pulled up rapidly right now. So especially with things being dry, if you haven't watered your plants in, water them in well during drought periods, once a week.
Yeah, the precipitation saturation has been really deceptive, because we've had maybe 3 inches of rain this month, but it happened twice and
either.
It ran off. So
that's
it's
right.
Really dry.
Yep.
It's
yep.
Really
and
dry.
We recommend that anything that was newly planted, and that would
absolutely
be from April till last week or yesterday, that it continue to be watered well, at least through October. If it's been a little while, once a week. If it was yesterday, still a couple times a week, a thorough soaking, just to get it through all this time, as Fred was saying.
As Fred says, get it rehydrated. There's a lot of storage that needs to go on now.
Yep. And now, next year, it's going to leaf out through stored energy. So this kind of preparation helps to give it not only good winter survival, but also a good leaf out in the spring, which, again, needs to do through stored energy.
It's a really great time to be in the garden.
True.
And
absolutely
to be transplanting or dividing, digging. So these are things, Ray, that you could do.
but I won't. I mean, the game is on.
It's not
I mean,
too late,
come on.
Ray.
Kind of as a general rule of thumb, deciduous things that lose their leaves, you kind of wait until they've lost their leaves to move them.
That's right.
But evergreens at this time is a good time. Needled evergreens or broadleafed evergreens can be moved very well at this
That's
time.
Right.
Well, the phone lines are starting to fill up here at 1-800-348-2551. We're joined today by Bob Graves, Fred Breglia, and Greg Ward. And let's go to the phones. Carrie in Plainfield, Mass. You're on.
Hi, Ray. Hey, I totally agree with you, what you said about Ward's Nursery.
Yeah, well, I was only half kidding Greg, because, and Bob
is here. There's a really
nice
place in Albany called
Fatigan's. Yeah, that works as well.
Okay, I have two quick questions.
All right, sir.
Guys.
All right.
Okay, first question. I have various veggies, and I raise them in 16-inch deep, the raised beds. And then every year I try to rotate the different vegetables into different boxes. Now, the boxes are filled with a commercial soil. It's a 50-50 mix of compost. And in the springtime, I'll amend that soil with my own compost, and I'll put in some horse manure, and then I even add some Miracle-Gro. And, I really feel like I'm jacking up the soil really good. But, as any gardener, at the end of the season, sometimes not always pleased with my results. My question is, can you overdo what you think is goodness to your soil?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
It sounds to me, I mean, maybe everything performed pretty well and you're all set. And, every year is different. I mean, some years the carrots look great and other years it's the cabbage, So it is always back and forth. But it sounds like you have a lot of organic matter in there already, especially if you used a bagged soil to fill those bins with.
Yeah, yeah.
So that you want to, you know, just make sure. And getting a soil test, University of Massachusetts.
Yeah, I've never done that.
No. You really got to check your pH, because a lot of compost, you know, you get these wonderful things, and they have a very high pH a lot of the time. So
that's
it's really important to check that.
Yep, and they have some, you could take a sample if you're in New York here.
I'm in Mass, but
in New York, we basically have the cooperative extensions, and you could take that.
I think over to you, Mass would probably do it.
They probably would, too.
I mean, you're close to Amherst, and so you could drive it over there, but you could also, if you just go to their website, you know, you have to link around a little bit. They have a page you can print out that tells you exactly what to do, how to make the sample. You put it in a baggie, you put it in the mail with a check for a reasonable amount of money. I can't remember what it is, you know, maybe $15 or $20. Do the complete test, which would be organic matter, pH, nutrients, and see what they say.
Yeah, but I think it's like $15 in New York as well. It might even be less, $12 to $15 for that kind of a test.
In my own experience,
I highly recommend it.
I'm finding a lot of times the soil in a situation like that is too alkaline. And if it gets alkaline, the plants are unable to access the nutrients that you
they're
have.
They're growing, but it's just not what I expect them to be.
You're looking for like a 6.0 to 7.0 range. Most plants like it that 6.5.
7 is neutral?
7 is neutral, so most plants like it a little bit on the acidic side. 6.5 to 7.0, even 6.0 to 7.0. Short answer here, most of the nutrients are readily available and not locked up. Certain pHs will actually lock up nutrients. So even though they're there, the plant can't take it up. And the only other thing I tell them about a soil is consider adding biostimulants, things like mycorrhizae, beneficial funguses, bacterias, trace elements, and minerals. All of those things are often in lower quantities or not even involved at all with any of your commercial soil mixes. So look at introducing those things. Mycorrhizae, I can't say enough stuff about that.
Okay, let's go to line number two, and Maria in Olive Bridge. Maria, you're on.
Hi, I have a question, a couple of questions about the invasive species silt grass. I actually know quite a bit about it because I've been battling it for a while this season. But so I was kind of hoping, I'm thinking of asking you about what you think will happen based on what I've already done. So if I could just explain quickly where I am and what I've done, maybe you can tell me what might happen and so that I can be prepared next season. Or maybe there's something I should continue doing now. So we bought a large tract of forest, and we only cleared a space for the house in the middle of it. The driveway is a half a mile. And so we have a little bit of lawn. We have lawn on the drain field. And we have a dog yard, and then the sides of the driveway. And maybe it started last year, and maybe it started the year before. I'm not sure, but I didn't know really much about it, if anything. And this year, it started to take over. So I don't want to use any chemicals. So we mowed, we pulled by hand, we weed whacked, several of us, myself and some people who work for me, did as thorough a job as we could. Now, we didn't get every single piece. We just did the bulk of it. And I believe we got it before it actually went to seed. So I am hoping that we kind of beat it back a little bit, but it also exists in the forest. And we didn't do that. I mean, it's not everywhere, but it's starting to creep around. Everywhere there were open areas. And the drain field, there's no lawn on it anymore. It's just all silt grass. So as far as the regular lawn, which is not all that big, since we mowed it, do you think that the real grass will continue to come up? Or do you think under the ground the silt grass is busily working to destroy the rest of my lawn?
Well,
I have
I would say that, that specifically controlling invasives, there are some, there are companies that do that, and you may want to, pursue that if you're interested. There are people that, that's what they do for a living. That said,
how would I find them?
If you emailed me at info@wardsnursery.com, I could give you the name of a couple in my area.
She's in Olive Bridge.
And then we could find somebody closer to you.
Okay.
Yeah, but if you're mowing, You're eliminating anything that's going to grow above the lawn. You're certainly eliminating the seed heads. And so that obviously is going to be a way to reduce and or eliminate the grass in those areas. It's the unmowed areas. It's those, you know, non-cultivated areas that you are, you know, going to continue to have a seed source from.
Yeah.
You may want to, you know, if it's grass area, make sure you fertilize it late, too, sometime late October, November, to try to strengthen the grass that you do have at that time when some of these other things are starting to not grow so much.
Okay. Hey, Maria, I got to tell you something. You set a record for the longest question ever posed on this show. That was amazing.
I'm sorry.
That was really quite something. You had it laid out really well. We have to take a break here. You guys want to just have any final words for Maria before we let her go?
Yeah, if you email me, we can definitely help you find someone who may be in your area that would help control that.
Thanks, Maria.
Thank you.
Bye now. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. We're joined today by Bob Graves of Fadigan's Nursery, Greg Ward of Ward's Nursery, and Fred Breglia of the Landis Arboretum. Yeah, it's the Gardening Show. We'll be back.
Support comes from Adam Ross Cut Stone, Albany, New York, providing an array of natural stone for outdoor patios, walkways, retaining walls, pools, and home entertaining. AdamRossCutStone.com. Stories Nursery, Freehold, New York, featuring a variety of mums, shrubs, and trees for fall planting and bulbs for spring, open Monday through Saturday, 8 to 5, and Sundays, 9 to 4. A gardener's destination, StoriesNursery.com. The Whistling Kettle Tea Room, tea shops and cafes in Ballston Spa in downtown Troy, New York. Over 170 loose-leaf teas from around the world in stores and online. WhistlingKettle.com. College Street Motors, Amherst, Massachusetts. Specializing in foreign and domestic car and truck repair services and 24-hour towing and recovery service for over 30 years. CollegeStreetMotors.com. And Colby Attorney Service, document filing, document and information retrieval, and other services including legal publishing and corporate record searches. ColbyService.com.
WAMC.org is the place where the lockbox is. What's the lockbox? Well, it is it's real now. It used to be just sort of a metaphorical thing, but if you go to our front office, you'll see an actual box with a lock on it. And what we do is we collect all of your pledges and we save them up for the beginning of the fund drive. Now, the fund drive starts on air October 5th. That's a week from Monday at 6 a.m. The goal of the lockbox is to shorten the fund drive, and I think today we're about 109,000 in the lockbox so far. So what we want to do is juice that thing up and get it full, and we will shorten the drive by days. WAMC.org is the website. You can make your pledge right now. It's a secure way to do that, and it'll all count on day one. It's the Gardening Show on Vox Pop. Ray Graff here. We're joined today by Fred Breglia, Greg Ward, and Bob Graves. Bob and Greg run nurseries. And Bob, what do you guys do now? September is here. Autumn is here. What sort of planning, what sort of work are you guys doing at the nursery?
Well, you know, fall is generally regarded as being an excellent time to plant. So a lot of folks are planting trees and shrubs at this time of year. Also, a lot of mums, chrysanthemums, this time of year, because your annuals sort of dried up during the season and you like a little fresh color. Time to plant your bulbs. Tulip bulbs, daffodils, hyacinths, crocus are planted in the fall. So there's actually quite a lot going on at this time. Cleaning up the perennial beds, doing a little remulching, trimming back. A lot of stuff to do this time of year.
Is this the time, Greg, when you make all the orders for next spring?
Yes, that's September, you know, September, October, really big months for that, certainly even before. Mm. And as Bob was saying, you know, it's September, and you said, actually, Ray, it's a great time to get things done. And the weather is perfect. The plants really will respond to it. The soil is cooler. The days are shorter, so they're not really being, even though it's a little dry out there, they're not being stressed by that. You know, get out there and make a new garden.
Mm. All right. And I have a sort of a philosophical question for you, Fred, our arborist. Is it okay to weep when you cut down a tree?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Yeah,
we got one that I think an old maple that's going to go.
Yeah,
and
sometimes,
I think the kids,
you know,
may shed a tear.
I wouldn't be surprised. You know,
it's okay?
It's certainly okay. Yeah, absolutely. Right. And, you know, like these guys said, fall, great time to plant. Also a good time to put up rodent protection.
Yeah.
Deer start to get a little antsy this time of year. They start using their antlers to scrape thin bark trees a lot of times. Cherries are famous for it, but apples and tilias, they love tilias and any of the lindens. So we start to put on tree wrap. I used to say first week of October, October 1st, we put our tree wrap on. And then one year, some renegade buck came in and got me the last week of September. So now we start the last week of September. And we also do these little hardware cages around the base of trees. And they're the things that stop voles, which is one of the biggest problems that a lot of our gardeners
have.
Why can't you leave them on all year round?
You know, you could. Sometimes you want to make sure that, you know, there's no debris that builds up around the base of that tree because you want to see the root flare. And also allowing for growth. We often wrap the cloth, or hardware cloth, it's like a metal cage.
Yeah.
But we put it pretty close a lot of times, too. So, you know, personally, I think anytime you can just take that off in the spring, it only takes a little while.
Okay.
Take it off in the spring, put it on in the fall, last week of September.
All right, back to the phones we go at 1-800-348-2551. It's Sharon's turn in Valencia. Hi, Sharon.
Hey there. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question about a dwarf Crimson Queen Japanese maple that I bought last year, and it's beautiful and growing and big. It's coming along, but all of a sudden I've noticed that it's lost the red.
Yes.
And I said, is that sun or a nutrient? There's a little bit of tips of new growth, and they're bright red, but the rest of the tree is almost like a bronzy green.
Yep, that's exactly what it's called, bronzing. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so it's okay and normal?
It's very normal at this time of year. And in another 10 days or 2 weeks, you will see all of that red pigment in that last hurrah of fall color.
Okay.
It's more a function of heat. It's the heat of summer that does that.
Oh.
It does a lot of it on almost all Jap maples that are red. Yep.
Okay. Then I'm not going to worry about it and feel okay. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Sharon. We appreciate the call. Another satisfied customer. Over to Peter in Sharon, Connecticut. Peter.
Oh, good afternoon, gentlemen. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
What can I do to prevent rodents from girdling my fruit-bearing blackberry canes in deep snow?
Well, definitely start clean. Make sure that the bed, the area underneath them is mulched, you know, cleanly, no weeds in there, that you've pruned out all of the old canes this fall so that it's nice and open.
Yeah, get the leaves out because that's a big part of it.
Yeah, the rodents are going to look for debris to get to the canes because they're afraid other predators are going to see them. So if it's open, as Greg said, there's a lot less traveling of rodents and they feel not so safe when they're eating things.
Makes sense. That includes any grass around them. Mowing that grass to a lawn level, even a nice short level, especially as we get so that it's not inviting. They're going along, going, oh, is an owl going to find me here?
Exactly.
Yeah, maybe I think so. So they're going to move out.
Yeah, we've got to remember this winter we had almost 4 feet of snow.
When we get that kind of snow,
they're pretty well hidden. Yeah. Underneath the snow.
It's tricky, but. And 4 feet is a real lot, so I don't know that you could do it. But, you know, if you're really concerned, if we're getting more snow, it's something that's really bothered you, you know, getting in there and actually compacting some of that snow by just stepping in it after every snowstorm, just taking a little walk through the blackberry patch or around it even to disturb their tunneling. They run into that more dense snow, and they hopefully will bounce off.
Prior to the snow, you could also put down there there's some organic repellents, you know, that may be some combination of dried blood or castor oil but a bunch of those put down. Some of them work better than others, but that applied prior to snowfall will help too.
Yep, and if you can, if the clump of berries are small enough or manageable enough that you could put a hardware cloth sort of barrier around it. Mm. When I say hardware cloth, we're talking that metal sort of fencing, but real small grids. You could, I know my brother, he's got, a good raspberry crop, and that's a good way to, you know, it could be protected as well. Whole cluster, the whole clump. Yeah. And actually, when you do that, you want to go down at least probably, I'd say, a little about 2 inches under the soil. So you kind of, if you have mulch there, you can scrape it away. If you don't have mulch there and you have soil, you could dig a little trench, just a little 2-inch trench. And I like to set that hardware cloth deeper 2 inches into the soil because most of the rodents, they're going to try to go under. But as soon as they see any kind of metal, they don't try to see, hey, is it 4 inches, 5 inches?
Right.
They see metal, away you go. And also I would say mow, as I mentioned before, if you can mow a nice big perimeter around that as well, like lawn, 5, 6, 10 feet of lawn perimeter before you get to that the berry bushes, Again, that's going to help that as well. But the hardware cloth is pretty much guarantees you no, you know, especially if you go high enough and deep enough, no way they can get to you.
Peter, thanks for the call. Number to call here is 1-800-348-2551. Leslie in Delmar. Leslie, you're up.
Yeah, how probable is it that 40 years ago when I put the Bacillus subtilis, a bacteria that's supposed to kill grubs, is that it's still working, considering they don't have many grubs around on the lawn?
Oh, boy.
Well, you know, one thing I'd ask you is that over the 40 years, did you ever use, like, different products on the lawn, like any other fungicides, any other chemicals, weed and feeds, things like that?
I did. Yeah, I did.
So do you have grubs now?
Not, you know, just minimal.
Yeah. So, I mean, first question, of course, is I wouldn't worry about it if you don't have grubs. But I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that product has a life as long as the beetles are relatively – or the grubs are relatively active and available. So
that's
once they dissipate and they really thin out, it wears out. So if
– Yeah, the milky spore is a disease of Japanese beetle grubs.
Yep.
And if there are not grubs there for it to infect, it dissipates. But it's also good only on Japanese beetle grubs.
That's
depending upon how far north you are, it sometimes doesn't survive the winter in real cold climates either.
I think that all of your grubs in Delmar went to my house. That's what happened to them. So, well, thanks for that, Leslie. We appreciate the call.
Thank you.
Bye now. Over to John in Florida, Massachusetts. John, you're up.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good.
Good.
I have a couple questions. One of them is cover crops. Normally, I use winter rye to hold the soil together from erosion and also to add nitrogen to the soil. I was considering maybe adding some hairy vetch or common vetch for additional nitrogen. And I was wondering if inoculation on the seed was really important in that, as far as adding a bacteria to create more nitrogen.
And this is
for inoculated seed.
Yes. This is for a vegetable garden?
Yeah, it grows several different types of vegetables.
Yeah. You know, I think you certainly probably want to inoculate it. I think it just would take better. Sounds more agricultural here, is it? This is several acres or?
No, maybe 5,000 square feet.
Yeah, yeah. And so, you know, that I would just hesitate on that to how is that vetch going to how are you going to deal with that in the spring?
Till it under.
Yeah.
Probably mow it and till it under.
Yeah. And so
it can be a little persistent.
That's what I would be concerned
about. That one can sometimes, yeah.
The winter rye is a great one. It doesn't do a lot for nitrogen. It's going to just provide you with organic matter. But some of the legumes are.
And I would just look into that, but I think that would be maybe better for a fallow area, an area you're going to leave for the season. And then there are other ones. There's buckwheat and red clover that you could consider as well.
Right. Okay. One more quick one. I put some blueberry plants in last year. I didn't do a lot of prep work on it, so I'd like to transplant those and do better prep. Is this a good time to do that?
Hair early.
Yep.
Again, they're deciduous. I'd rather wait till the leaves are starting to come off of those a little bit later.
You're going to get a much better success rate if you just wait till the leaves fall off onto deciduous plants. Can it be moved now? Yeah, probably. But again, success rates, you don't want to lose them.
Okay.
So when those leaves are gone, that plant's sleeping for the most part.
And we're
except for roots.
Okay. Close. We're close.
Yeah,
I mean,
we're
only talking about 10 days or so.
Yeah, 2 weeks maybe.
And in between now and then, as we were saying earlier, water them. If you want to soak them all in really well a couple times, that will make a big difference too.
John, thanks a lot for the call. This one came in via email from Daniel. I'm soon preparing my garlic bed for fall planting. Is it advisable to fertilize the bed in the fall or wait to fertilize in the spring? I've always been hesitant to fertilize in the fall when I prep the bed, thinking it might encourage the bulbs to grow too much prior to going dormant. That's from Daniel.
Well, you know, again, I talk about a lot of times microbes. I talk about living organisms in soil, and a lot of people, you know, jump right to fertilizers, but they don't often go and inoculate the soils with mycorrhizae, bacteria, minerals, and all of those things are often the things that are the most deficient. If you give any soil mycorrhizae, your plant is going to do better. Almost every single plant. There's nothing that would, I think,
a
not
lot of
benefit.
Your, a lot of your organic so, fertilizers now will have.
They're starting to carry a lot more. I've noticed that, which is great. That's a great.
I would suggest spring.
But otherwise, spring. That's what I would say.
And the reason for that is that you're setting them in the fall. They are rooting in. They are a bulb, though. They're going to sort of settle in, and then they're going to do a lot of growing in April, May, June. And so adding the nutrients, you know, first part of April, sometime in April, works
okay.
Best.
Back to the phones and Susan in Gilderland. Susan, you're on.
Yeah, we have several beds in our yard, a couple of which have had for a number of years daisies, just perennials, the standard daisies. And in years past, they would bloom initially. They would bloom again. And now they're no longer, they bloom once. I deadhead them and then they're done. Is there any? Should I be dividing them or?
We got a real bad. I assume it's a cell phone, Susan. Did you guys catch the drift?
Maybe. So it sounds like she in the past she's had repeat bloom and now they're not doing that. They still are blooming once.
Right.
I think without seeing the bed. I mean, yes. If it's just thick, solid, you know, daisy. You know, leaves and tissue and so that there's nothing else there and it's been there for several years. Certainly, this is, as we were talking before, this is a great time to take that up, pull out all of that, turn over that soil, amend that soil with compost, and then replant some of those, you know, larger, healthier sections so that they can expand into some new soil. And that would certainly be best for the plants. Either way, that would be best.
All right, great. Thank you.
Thanks a lot for the call. The number to call here is 1-800-348-2551. It's Vox Pop. It's the Gardening Show. Ray Graff here, Bob Graves, Fred Breglia, and Greg Ward. They're our panel of experts today. And let's go to John in Liberty. John.
Oh, thank you. I am a garlic grower also. Okay. I harvested about 6 weeks ago. My friend suggested putting black plastic, which I'd never done, over the weeds that had grown in the ensuing 2 weeks, say. So now I just took off the black plastic, and I'm not sure what to do because there's like a foot-high bed of dead grass there. I'd like to plant my garlic right in there because I have to mulch it later. Any ideas or suggestions, please?
Yeah. In the future, when you do that, it's a very effective way to prepare a bed for planting by putting the plastic down. But typically what I do is always get a weed whacker out, string trimmer, and cut all the grass down. Mow it all down real close. Use your lawnmower. Mow it all down really close and then put the plastic on, because then what happens is take the plastic off and you're almost right to soil. There's very little, grass that you're going to see there. And if you leave it there for a month, you're going to have absolutely nothing. But otherwise, you can still go in there now with a string trimmer and cut out all the tall grass, rake it up, and then everything should be dead at this point. So you should be able to theoretically just plant. You could also top dress with any kind of organics you'd like to, work those in a little bit as well. But the soil should be very workable.
That would be the case, is if the soil, planting garlic, you want to be able to just sort of slip those cloves right in there. And so if this is a no-till situation, you still want to sort of loosen up the rows in which you're going to plant the garlic. And those tall, grassy, dead plants are sort of in the way. So removing them one way or another, mowing them may be the case, or just sort
you
of
be able to just yank them out. Maybe.
Yeah, just pull it all out or out. Just work them out with
loosen it up at the same time.
With your fork. Yep. Are we talking about 10 by 10 or?
No, it's about 50 by 50.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
So, I mean, do you till normally?
Not really. No, I'm not a tiller.
Yep.
My wife and I don't do much tilling either. We've had really good luck without ever tilling. But it does come down to, leaving the covers on for a certain amount of time, preparing that material. But I think we've said there, just get through, rip it out, and plant. You'd probably be all right.
I would also consider some kind of mulching material between the rows for the future.
Personally, I like straw. I think straw works really nice. But there's a lot of different things that would work for that. But I like the way that straw, when it breaks down, really turns your soil black. And I find like vegetables really like that stuff. So,
John, thank you very much for the call. It's the Gardening Show on today's Vox Pop, 1-800-348-2551. Let's go to Doe in Wendell, Mass. Doe.
Hi, I'm hearing you better now. For a while, sound wasn't getting through.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I have a phone, a question about that man who added Miracle-Gro to his compost. I wonder what was that about. I mean, did they...
Yeah, it's not something you typically do.
Now, is Miracle-Gro chemical?
It's a fertilizer.
It's a fertilizer, but it's
Is it organic?
No, it's soluble. No. It's a soluble fertilizer, but it is not organic. And I agree with you. I would not add it to your compost either. It
really doesn't do anything for you, really.
Yeah, I should think. Now, I have another question about the compost. Is what time of year would it be a good time to add a bacterial booster shot?
Yeah, any of the microbes that I was talking about, that could be added anytime that the soil is really, sort of above freezing. But right now is a great time because it's you don't want to go so close to the freezing point where the spore gets sort of activated and then it doesn't have time to really get colonized. So now is a good time right now.
Yeah, good. I'm glad I asked.
But any of that stuff, there's things called like BioStarts and there's a lot of things out there. But you're looking for ones that are complete with... there's like 17, 18 different species of mycorrhizae in the bag and a dozen different species of bacteria and then minerals. There's trace elements and minerals and things. But, this is great. That is really good stuff for the compost.
All right, Doe, thanks a lot. And so just do that before the ground freezes.
Get it in now if you're going to do those bacteria and fungi type of symbiotic relationship kind of microorganisms. Get them in now. Mix it in with the soil. Don't just sprinkle it on top. They have to be mixed with soil to activate, and then moisture will do the rest and temperature.
It's Vox Pop on WAMC. It's The Gardening Show. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. We'll take a brief break, and then we'll hit the home stretch with Bob, Fred, and Greg and your calls.
Support comes from Saratoga Saddlery, Saratoga Springs, New York, an equestrian lifestyle boutique featuring cowboy boots by Lucchese and Ariat for women, men, and kids. On Facebook and saratogasaddlery.com. Rhinebeck Artist Shops, professional picture framing and fine art materials, Rhinebeck New Paltz, and now at 793 Broadway in Kingston. Rhinebeckart.com. The 2015 Saratoga Showcase of Homes, benefiting two charities, Rebuilding Together Saratoga and Habitat for Humanity. Weekends through October 4th, SaratogaShowcaseOfHomes.com for tickets. Quality Foreign Car Care, Ballston Spa, New York. Sales and service of Audi, BMW, Mercedes, Volvo, Saab, Volkswagen, and Porsche. QFCC.com. And Schenectady County Historical Society presenting 55th Annual Stockade Walkabout, celebrating three centuries of Schenectady history and architecture, featuring tours of the insides of historic homes, churches, and spaces in the Stockade neighborhood. This Saturday, 11 to 5, SchenectadyHistorical.org.
Vox Pop on WAMC. Yeah, it's a gardening show and a good one. A spirited program with Bob Graves, Fred Breglia, and Greg Ward, and you at home or wherever you happen to be. If you're driving, try to be hands-free when you call. It's against some state laws, and it's also just safer not to hold the phone and drive. Pat, on the road. Oh, you're on the road to Granville. How are you doing, Pat?
Very good.
You're on.
Thanks for putting me on. I was calling about trimming a magnolia that we have in the front yard. It's an older tree. I've trimmed it before. I'm just wondering if this is a good time of the season to do that.
No, I wouldn't prune magnolias right now. I typically prune magnolias middle of summer, selectively pruning. Second week of June to first week of August at the latest. This time of year... you often want to avoid pruning because a lot of times this time of year things are shutting down again and leaves are kind of actively starting to fall off. And the last thing you want to do is sort of stimulate growth. And if you do stimulate growth, that growth often is susceptible to winter injury. So, personally, I'd recommend that midsummer time is.
What about the dormant period?
You could do dormant season too.
A lot of pruning happening on spring flowering shrubs, magnolia included, in March into April.
Ideally, though, you'd like to do it after it flowers.
That's what
you're going to be taking flowers off if you trim it.
Well, that's what I was going to say. One of the fun things about that dormant period is you get these large branches that you can bring in and force. And it's pretty exciting.
Yeah. It wouldn't hurt the plant to do it that time of year.
It wouldn't hurt.
But you would lose flowers. And, you know, personally, I'd go midsummer, but it is fun to force them.
Yeah.
It is fun to force them. You get some really cool.
Forsythia, magnolia, and crab apples.
Yep. But either way, not now.
All right, Pat, I hope you're still safe on the road. 1-800-348-2551 is our number. Ed in Hadley, Mass. Ed, you're up.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. My question is, I have a problem with bittersweet and sumac, and I want to get rid of them. I keep cutting them back, and they keep reappearing. I want to make them disappear.
Well, when you cut them, the timing makes a difference. I remember when I started at the Arboretum close to over 17 years ago now, the first thing that one of the committees expressed concern about was sumac. They could not get rid of sumac. It was in the perennial gardens, it was in the lily beds. And really, when you think about trees, we talked about getting things ready for the winter and storage and being able to leaf out in the springtime. Well, if you think about how they leaf out in the springtime, it's all stored energy. So if you wait for that sumac, for example, to leaf out in the spring, and then as soon as it leaves out, you cut it. It's used stored energy to leaf out. Then when you cut it, it has very little reserve left to put more leaves out. And then it'll send out usually a secondary weak sprout, and then you cut it again, and almost always, you know, really good luck with sumac. I've got rid of it really fast that way. Bittersweet would work the same way, but it does come down to timing. This time of year, you can cut it and cut it and cut it, and a lot of energy is in the roots right now. So you're not really going to stop it this time of year.
Cutting it as we enter fall, it's not going to sprout again for the most
part. That's true. That's true. But it'll sprout in the spring for them.
This could be the first cut.
This could be the first cut. Okay. Yep.
Yeah.
Which would make it easier to do.
That would make
your spring
job easier. And then when it refoliates in the spring from stored energy, then hit it. Yep.
Hit it again.
Hit it again.
Sometimes it can take years depending upon the how religious you are about getting out there and keeping cutting it. You know.
But that important time is that spring when it leaves out, it's going to start to photosynthesize. So if you kind of slack and let that, you know, I didn't get it. Well, now it's got a lot of stored energy and it doesn't take long. So once you make that initial cut after it leaves out, look for the second growth and get right on, you know, you got to be really diligent with that, right on your timing.
All right, here's one about vines. Came in via email from Anonymous. We have vines that are choking all of our trees. They're very strong. I can't pull them off myself. We lost 2 pine trees last year to these vines, and when the trees came down, there were about 2,000 feet of vine wrapped around them. We don't believe in chemicals. Any ideas?
Same.
Well, it's probably bittersweet.
Probably bittersweet.
And because if it's wrapping around. And, cutting the base of the vine and then repeat cutting as they resprout is really the only other alternative.
Okay.
Yep. And even sometimes with, like, vines like Virginia creeper or grapes, if you don't want them, grapes. And a lot of times people will, you know, you cut them, but then how do you get them out of the tree? Well, you know, first off, you could try to pull them out. But if you can't get them down, as long as you cut them at the base – The grapevines, they rot so fast up in the branches. So 1 year they hang there. The next year they'll fall out on their own.
Do you think they're going to have to recut? Are they going to have to do that more than once a month?
With the sumac, when I did that at the Arboretum, I got rid of it after one spring. Forever. Never came back. Back on that one. But, you know, some vines are a little more persistent, and timing is a big part of it.
Let's go to Ed in West Hampton. Ed, you're on.
Hello there.
Hello.
Yeah, I have a question about having to move a rhododendron and a couple of holly plants. Any suggestions around moving them this time of year?
Are they really big and well-established?
Yeah, they've been there in the ground for about 10 years.
So where's West Hampton? Where is that?
West Hampton, Mass.
Mass, okay. Yeah, so you're...
It's high altitude, you know, 1,200 feet.
Okay, you're not on the Connecticut River. You're a little higher.
No.
Okay.
No, we're up high.
You know, as a general rule, those are two plants that we recommend in the Berkshires as giving a sort of sheltered exposure. We usually recommend east side of the house with a sort of shaded west and south exposure, so they're not getting the sun in the wintertime. And so moving those plants now and making sure you choose the right spot is somewhat stressful to both of those plants in our colder areas. It can be done. I think if you have the right spot, I think that's a great thing. I would hydrate them, as we said before, so water them really well for a day or two beforehand, and then dig them. And if you have experience digging things, then I won't say any more. But if you don't, you would trench around each one, you know, at least a shovel's width down 15, 18 inches so that you're creating a cylinder with which these plants would be sitting on top of a soil cylinder. And then you would start to undermine that in order to try to maintain this root ball that won't ideally break up. Both of those things have some pretty fibrous roots, and so it should hold together.
And timing-wise, you'd say get now, right on it now.
Yeah, this is a great time. The sooner the better on those. If they're heavy and you go, oh my gosh, this is like, you know, 150 pounds, what am I going to do? Once you've dug all the way around it, you've worked the bottom of that pillar into a tiny little spot, you break it free at that point. So that's the first time you actually put pressure on the plant itself. And then you let it lie over, you slip a big tarp underneath it, roll it up, slip it under, push the plant back the other side, unroll the tarp so you have now the tarp underneath it, go get a friend and yank it out of the hole.
Okay. Yep. The good thing about those rhododendrons and plants that you have working for you is that they're not a real deep-rooted plant.
They're shallow.
They're shallow-rooted, and they that makes for a much easier dig.
And plant it at the same depth they are now. Don't plant it any deeper.
Okay. How about the holly?
Yeah, same concept. Same. It's a ditto.
Okay.
Yep. All right, Ed, thanks a lot for the call. This is via email from Victor. Hello, I'm from Gilderland. Well, congratulations. Last few days, many crows, ravens have come and pull out the grass in our backyard. Looks like someone has tilled the lawn. Is this because they're feeding on insects or worms in the lawn? Is there any chemical to get rid of the insects? Is that patch of lawn damaged permanently? Please advise. Thank you, Victor.
You know, you're not exactly sure what they're after. It could be grubs, could be earthworms.
But it's something. It's
but
not
it's
the
something.
Grass.
They're
it's
not the grass. Yeah, they're not doing it for no reason.
No.
It's probably turkeys and skunks.
Could be crows.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah, but the grass won't be permanently damaged.
You can overseed it.
You might overseed it.
Actually, right now,
yep.
It'd be a great
skunks
time
will do that, too?
It.
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Yeah. They tend to make little divots, like someone's been out there with a golf club.
And you can sprinkle cayenne pepper out there on his lawn.
But raking that over,
that'll stop a lot of them.
Reseeding is probably the best thing. You know, there are no chemical controls that are really going to make sure that doesn't happen.
Nope, not necessary.
What do the skunks want?
Grubs and worms.
White grubs.
Really?
Yep.
I'll be darned.
Yep.
All right, over to Adelia in New Lebanon, Mass. You're on.
Hi, this is Tom, Adelia's man of all about the house and the bed and in charge of husbandry.
Ah, well, welcome to the program. You sound like you have a tough job. Go ahead.
Oh, very, very complex job.
All right.
So we bought a much beaten up, dried out peach tree several years ago on discount somewhere and put it in the ground. And after a couple of years, we had nothing. And then the year before last, we had about 200 peaches.
Wow, nice.
On this thing, and it was a wonderful, sweet harvest. And you guys know as well as we do that peaches nowadays are often mushy at the store.
Yep.
So we were thrilled. Then last year, with that early frost, we had nothing. Same on our apple trees. Then this year, we had a nice mezzo kind of harvest of peaches, I'd say 30 to 40 on this tree. And my wife, Adelia, picked a few and said, well, they're not quite ready. And we took them down to New York City, and they ripened in the kitchen, and they were fine. And when we came back from various visiting grandchildren, not a single peach or pit was in evidence. So
rats.
About 20 or 25 had disappeared, and there was one broken branch. And we started speculating that some thief had entered the rural yard, and the mail guy down in New Lebanon, Steve, said, well, you know, I think that might be a bear, and I'm just curious what you guys think about the likely thief of our 25 lovely ripening peaches on our...
Well, it could be squirrels also.
But with no pits on the ground, we thought squirrels would have a hard time making off with a big fist-sized peach.
I agree that maybe there would be some residue if it was exclusively squirrels. But, they would also, you know, if there's a lot of peaches on that branch, one more squirrel on there might have broken the branch. Depends on how big it is.
What about neighbors?
Branch, an inch or two thick, or was it a little half-inch branch, you know?
The branch was a good inch thick branch.
Yeah.
And so you don't agree with Steve that it's
a bear? No, I would think that it could be bears.
It could be a bear.
I'm just perhaps giving you some other choices.
It doesn't mean bare, but a bare certainly is capable of that.
Your problem remains the same, though. You're going to have to fence that off somehow.
Yep.
And if
that's what I was suggesting.
Sometimes you got to build a cage around them.
Yep. Yep, oh, and that's going to kind of assure yourself that you're going to have it. There's a lot of different products out there, deer fencing and things like that, that are relatively simple, and you can put them up in the fall. We do a lot of temporary fencing, so you know I'm a big advocate of fencing because it really does help to keep those critters out. And you know, fencing goes up, especially the type of fence that we use at the Arboretum, quick up, quick down, rolls up, and lasts indefinitely. Hmm.
And you did mention that the peaches that you picked that weren't quite ripe did ripen.
Yeah.
And so you could keep that in mind for next year, is to harvest a little early and see if that doesn't help.
Well, on the larger question, why is it that grocery peaches, even at, like I bought some peaches at the Union Square Green Market day before yesterday, and they were very mushy. Why is it that so many people, it's kind of like VW, you end up being so wary of peaches, because it seems like only one in three actually meets the EPA requirements of juiciness.
All right.
A lot of it has to do with, I think they pick it before it's actually perfectly ripe, and if they picked it when it was perfectly ripe, then it would be never last, it would never be sellable.
Yeah, how long it's been off the tree before you got it.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah.
And a peach is a crop that is not quite as easy as an apple to pick premature and hold.
My recommendation is to start as close as possible. So you know, maybe California is a little far away. Start with New Jersey peaches and work your way north.
All right. Thank you very much for that call. And let's go to Richard in Dolgeville. Richard.
Yes, thanks for fitting me in. I 12 years ago, I planted three clumps of white birch trees. And I noticed last summer that the woodpeckers were pecking holes in the in the bark, about a quarter inch apart in rows all the way around the tree, and then they go up an inch and do it again.
Yeah.
And I've got probably 1,000 holes there. I'm just wondering, can I save the tree?
Yeah, you could save it. I've had real good luck just putting screen, old household screen, with a stapler.
Yeah, somehow to physically exclude them. Yeah.
Yep, you put it around the areas on the holes, and then it's temporary. You leave it there for, you know, a season or two. Depending how long, you know, it needs to be held there, and then you take it away, and by then the critters have gone elsewhere. The woodpeckers have moved on. They found other holes and other trees.
I've wrapped the tree in aluminum foil, and they just pecked holes right through the aluminum foil, and they pulled the foil off.
Yep, I wouldn't use. I wouldn't use that.
Screening
works really well. Old screen. I've used it over many years and had really, really good luck.
That's got to cost you quite a bit to buy that much aluminum foil, right?
Yeah. Not only that, by now they've gone the full height of the tree, the leaves at the top of the tree look pretty weak.
Yeah. Yep. If they've put that series of holes, that sort of grid, all the way around, and then what happens is the tree does start to fail because there's no cambium layer left to sort of allow for the movement of nutrients back and forth and the expansion of the tree. So, so if you can stop it, as Fred said, the screening material, they probably can't, especially if you use the metal version, not the plastic version.
Exactly.
They probably can't get through that. And if you can protect as much of it as possible, that would be helpful.
Yep. Okay. Another thing to look for, too, is that it might be also in conjunction with a bronze birch borer.
Yeah,
and if it's a paper birch in particular, those are subject to bronze birch borer.
You may lose them anyway.
And if they're not there now, they're coming.
They're coming.
Yeah, exactly. So look for that. And they have a little, almost like a D-shaped hole as opposed to a round hole.
Okay.
Small.
In the 30, 40 seconds we have left here, I'll read one via email that'll show you my ability to mispronounce things. I might have this wrong. My Spirea?
Yep.
Oh,
correct.
I got it right. My Spirea is 15 years old, and I cleaned out old wood inside the plant midsummer, but I want to cut it down lower to match a new Spirea mate nearby that is 3 feet tall. When can I cut the older one, and how far down? It's 6 feet tall now. Is it fall or spring 2016? That's from Tana in Cooperstown. We have about 30 seconds.
I'd rejuvenate it in the spring.
Spring,
yep.
For sure.
Yeah.
Prior to bud break, so the buds begin to swell on all your deciduous trees, at that point you could cut it six inches to the ground.
Yeah.
6, 7 inches.
Or
back
it
to
out.
What you need to match that other one.
All right. Well, we have 15 seconds. Anybody have any wisdom they want to share?
You pronounced that Spirea perfectly right.
How about that? I mean, you know what? Who knew?
You
got lucky once in a while.
I have a hard time spelling it sometimes. Too many vowels in there for
S-P-I-R-E-A.
Me.
Wow.
I just read it, so I mean.
And the Latin is actually very close. It's also spirea.
Well, we've ended on a boring note. Hey, guys, thank you for being here. Bob Graves of Fadigan's Nursery. Good luck. Have a great season, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you.
Fred Breglia, good luck at the Arboretum.
Thank you.
You're all year-round there, right?
I'm year-round. Yep, we're open dawn to dusk year-round, landisarboretum.org.
All right, and Greg Ward, Ward's Nursery.
And I'm there year-round, too.
Okay, gentlemen, thanks for being here. Support comes from Planned Parenthood Mid-Hudson Valley for over 80 years, advocating for policies that will protect women's rights into the future. PPMHV.org for more information. The Department of Theater Arts at SUNY New Paltz opening the 2015 fall season with Joseph Goodrich's suspense-filled romantic mystery, Panic, October 1st through 18th, newpaltz.edu/theatre. The Lathrop Community, serving older adults in the Quaker tradition for 25 years, independent living in Northampton and East Hampton, Massachusetts, in the heart of the Pioneer Valley, lathrop.kendall.org. And LAREC, presenting their 31st annual Juried Fall Arts Festival, October 31st and November 1st at the Civic Center in downtown Glens Falls, featuring live music, children's activities, and fine arts and crafts, larac.org. Thanks for listening today. Thanks to our panel, and thanks to everybody who called in. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Your phones were answered by Deb Malik, our producer, Jessica Blaustein-Marshall. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, yep, it's Food Friday already. Stay tuned now for news.